Welcome to Thriving. I'm your host, Wayne Visser, and joining me today is Robin Jorgensen. She is the founder and CEO of Women Igniting Change. Let's get straight to it. And welcome to the Thriving Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Wayne. I'm pleased to be here.
Robin, what we're going to get into in this conversation is all about women creating social impact for a better world, which is the work that you do. I'm looking forward to that. But let's dive straight into maybe the obvious question. Why focus on women?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I had a long career in corporate America and I left 12 years ago to start Women Igniting Change. And as an executive in the corporate space, what I noticed was that the expectations were different, at least in the industry that I was in. The expectations were different for women. And what I saw was women not standing up in their conviction, not speaking their truth, not sharing their voices in rooms where they needed to be heard. So, you know, what I do now is go back in and serve the woman I used to be, because that was also me. So seeing women who are extraordinarily talented, have amazing gifts, have amazing insight, and want to make a difference in the world, and they're minimizing themselves because they have all of the voices in their head and also societal norms and expectations that tell them that they're not equal. So, you know, our mission at Women Igniting Change is to unleash the contribution of women around the world, because I truly believe to my core, when we do that, that is the key to bringing a more sustainable world.
Yeah. I sometimes think it's incredible that we're in the 21st century and we do still have to have this kind of program and these kinds of conversations, because it should be obvious, right? It should be obvious that women are equal and that, you know, everyone has an amazing contribution to make. And yet we just know from where we're at in the world today that there is still a long way to go. Why is that? Why are we finding it so difficult to bridge that gap? Obviously, we've had a long history of patriarchy and mm-hmm. so on.
Right.
But it's an issue that's been recognized for a long time now. Supposedly, companies have been working on it for a long time. And I know you work a lot with business, so I'd be interested to hear, you know, what is it that makes it still necessary that we champion this as an agenda?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. You know, I know that, you know, this podcast is all about sustainability. And in organizations, predominantly, everything, they want everything to be a quick fix. So if we go in and we do a program that's a year long or even 2 years long, they start to lose interest at about 6 months. This is not a quick fix. This is literally not only shifting the narrative in the organization, but it's changing behaviors in the organization, because the system and the structure as it currently exists, it works for those at the top, which are primarily Caucasian male, and the system has worked just fine. So why change it? Now, evidence is now there that shows them why they should change it, but it's that consistent conscious behavior to want to make those changes, and it takes time. It's not do this initiative or program for a year and, oh, squirrel, let's go do this instead because we don't see enough progress over here. And it takes the whole, which is another issue. So it's not, it takes all levels of the organization, and we're constantly reminded societally, culturally, whether it's in the media, whether it's in our organizations, movies, entertainment, the message is everywhere that women are not equal. And, you know, we're constantly bumping up against those challenges. So, I mean, it's a massive issue that takes behavior change, and that's hard.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I do wonder then, why have you linked it to making a difference or social impact, right? Because you could have just focused on empowering women in their corporate roles, in their work lives, as leaders. So what's the importance of linking to social impact?
Yeah, two answers to that. One, I was raised by extraordinary parents, and my mother is still the queen of volunteering in the county that I'm from in New York. So I was raised from parents who have given back and are still giving back. So that's in my DNA. So that's one. Two, I went to Rwanda for the first time in 2017, and that experience completely transformed not only my life, but expanded the work that we do at Women Igniting Change. So that's really where the social impact arm to the business started to come into play. We've always approached, since I started the company in 2011, we've always given a percentage back of any investment that organizations make with us to an organization that serves women and girls. But as far as expanding women and social impact, that really started in 2017 with my trip to Rwanda. And I'm typically there 3 to 4 times a year. Pre-pandemic, I'm heading back in July. But working with those women on the ground and working with governmental agencies and really understanding not only the impact that women can have in the developing world, but how you take the lessons learned from them, bring them back over here into the US and help women in the corporate space. Because I believe, you know, whether you're a C-suite executive, a mid-level manager, an individual contributor, women, we innately have ideas that can transform communities, that can transform industries and or the world. And we tend to squash them down because either we don't see the resources, we don't give ourselves permission to even go there that it can happen. So every woman on the planet has one of those ideas for social impact and for social good. And our job is to pull that out and bring it to fruition.
Yeah. Well, I love the connection to Africa. Of course, I was born in Africa, in Zimbabwe, grew up in South Africa, traveled extensively. I always feel so at home in general in developing countries, but especially in Africa. Haven't yet been to Rwanda. I was in Uganda last year. And
pretty close.
yeah. It's definitely on the target list. And I have a colleague who's been based there the last year and a half or so, and it definitely looks amazing. But what I like about what you said is that you listen and you take back the lessons also from your visits to places like that. So I'm interested in that because I think there's a danger sometimes that, especially in the rich countries of the North and the West, that we think that we now have the answers and we go and share those answers rather inappropriately, I would say, with those in developing countries. And this has been the story of colonialism, of course. So this idea that there are strong, amazing women everywhere and that we can learn, you know, from them wherever they are, including in developing countries, seems to me an important part of the work that you do. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I would be happy to. How much time do we have? Mm-hmm. Rwanda is one of my favorite places on earth. And this will be my 8th trip going over in July. And the women there have not only the resiliency and the tenacity of survival based on what they went through 29 years ago with the genocide against the Tutsi, but the innovation and the creativity that, again, they've had no other choice but to be innovative, but to be creative and create things from nothing. Those are skills that we could learn from here. So when we go over there, to your point, we don't come at it through a Western lens because, at least here in the US, there is a mindset that, you know, we have the solutions, let's bring those over. They have the same talents and gifts that we have here. they're no difference. They just lack the opportunity to use them. So when we go over, we conduct listening tours and we listen to the needs on the ground. And then we pull all of that together and we find out how we can support the ideas they already have, because they already know how to do it. They just need some skill sets around how to actually implement them. So we never come at it with, we know everything. And the other piece to working on the ground there is that, you know, some organizations will come in and they'll provide economic development programming for women, which is not bad. However, if you're not addressing the societal and root causes of why the economic disparity exists in the first place, you're simply giving the women added work. So, you know, when we do work over there, we approach it through a gender transformative lens, where we work not only with the women, but we really try to address the societal norms that exist underneath, working with the men and having the men understand that if the women have power and money and agency, how does that benefit him? How does it benefit the family? How does it elevate the family as a whole? And having those conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are so many women who have inspired me in Africa and elsewhere. And we see also a younger generation of women rising up, which is very exciting. If you look at the climate movement, I mean, this is true globally with people like Greta Thunberg, but also in Africa, people like Elizabeth Watuti from Kenya. I mean, these are become role models, actually, for people all around the world. And I do notice also on some of the pictures you've got on your Women Igniting Change website. In fact, there's a wonderful sort of collage picture, very diverse set of women that you're working with and part of the program, and also on average very young. So is there something about working with young people that you find important?
Well, I think, you know, especially the continent of Africa, that continent literally is the future. As we know, it's the youngest, you know, population on the planet. So they literally are the future. But I think, you know, I've raised two millennials, and I think they think differently. And they're much more steadfast in their beliefs and their convictions, and they're very unwavering around them. Greta, to your point. So I think, you know, working with that population, it opens up our eyes even further, as open as ours already are, to just what possibilities exist, and really helps us elevate that to a new level.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get a little bit practical now, because of course we can talk forever about how important it is to empower young women, all women, to support their development, to let them recognize themselves as leaders and so on. But how practically do you enable that to happen or support that in some of the work that you do?
A multitude of ways. You know, so some of the women's leadership strategy programming that we bring in, it's done in such a way that the way that we describe it is we transform women leaders into strategic business partners. So it's really helping them with those tangible skills that they need to advance to the next level, looking at everything through an organizational lens versus being a subject matter expert, and giving them the skills required in order to advance in that capacity. So that's one. Another one is our Global Changemakers community, where we have women come together, and this is where we start to pull out those ideas that they have, even though they think they don't, they do. So putting them through facilitated ideation and innovation sessions, where they can start to flesh that idea out and bring it to life, and tying the lessons that they learn in that community back to their role. So it ties in beautifully with, you know, the business results, having them achieve a tangible ROI back to the organization. They're feeling on purpose and inspired because they're putting something that matters to them out into the world. And it's also expanding the organization's footprint at the same time. So that's another way that we do that.
Yeah. And can you give us any examples then, if we could get specific? Are there a few individuals you can think of that you've worked with where you've really seen them blossom and seen them making an impact as a result of working in this way?
Yeah. You know, similar to myself, you know, a lot of women, the ideas that they have stem from personal experience in their life in some way. Right. So, you know, one of the women that we've worked with, she's at a senior director level, and her passion was all around enabling women who are in domestic violence shelters to have sustainable support after they leave. Because what she lives in New York City. So what she found was that they're in this facility and they get support, but then they leave and they're expected to just be on their own. But there's no benchmarks as to how they're thriving afterwards. So she created this amazing curriculum that's a year long that enables them to have financial literacy support, workforce development support, mental support, coaching, to really track the success of them coming back into society and being successful versus being on rinse and repeat and ending up back in the shelter. So that's one example. Another example, a woman leader who's in Canada, she's an African-American woman. She's actually from the Caribbean. And her desire was to provide mental health through a BIPOC lens, because she realizes that the training that people have, it's not through that lens necessarily, and it's through a very Western white lens. And she wanted to ensure that people going through some type of therapy like that, that were from the BIPOC community, the therapists understood what they needed. So again, she developed a curriculum specifically for BIPOC therapists and even white therapists to understand that community and to reach them on a different level. So those are a couple of examples.
Yeah. And it strikes me that a lot of the benefit that they see also comes from the sense of support that they get by being a community through the work that you do, but also there's a kind of solidarity that happens there, or a mutual support. I'm thinking of also some stories of my partner who's done work with groups of women in Algiers, in Afghanistan, and you know, they really support one another, which is incredible. I remember we also visited a Nike factory in Sri Lanka a couple of years ago. And it's an incredible experience because, of course, it is like you sort of see in the pictures. It's this massive area of just thousands of women, almost all women, working on various elements of making Nike clothing, not only Nike, Victoria's Secret and others. And we went to the boardroom, and in the boardroom it was all men except for a woman that they had invited to come and speak to us. And immediately we said, "What's going on here? You know, this seems like this is very, very unequal." But then they started talking to us about the programs that they have to support women and to start to change. And they were very much mutual support. I mean, it was women self-organizing to support each other on the issues they faced in the workplace, on the issues they faced actually back in their family setting, because it's a very patriarchal setting. And actually, these women were earning more than the men. Many of the men were unemployed.
Yeah.
And so just that sense of camaraderie and support seems to be something probably even that we as men could learn something from. Has that been your experience as well, that there's a real sort of network effect there?
1,000%, yes. Yes. You know, on the ground, you know, doing our work in East Africa, the co-ops that these women form, similar to what you were mentioning, those collectives, you know, there's not only a sense of common interest, but there's always the championing of each other in such a way that, like, I've got you and you've got me and we've got each other. And you can feel that, whether it's in a co-op in East Africa or whether it's in any type of community, especially for women, it's a shared sense of connection to something that's greater than yourself. And when you get a group of women together that feel that and want the best for society outside of just themselves, you know, you can bounce ideas off of each other. You can share best practices. You know, as you and I know, when you're putting social good out into the world, you're going to get knocked around a little bit. It's just the nature of the beast. And to have a community to land on, where when you get knocked down, they pick you up, they dust you off and say, here's why you're doing this. We've got you. Get back out there. There's nothing like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And what is it then that you think women who are striving to make an impact need to learn from each other and from going through programs like yours? What are some of the things that they struggle with, and also some of the things that everyone needs to be aware of? Because you've mentioned system a couple of times. It is the system that also makes it hard. So, and then my partner says, women don't need to be empowered. Men need to be empowered to understand, you know, that women, you know, need the opportunities, and that's all.
I love that.
How do you, you know, what is it that women are struggling with, and how can they be supported in moving through that?
Yeah, well, you know, some of the things that we struggle with, one is imposter syndrome. You know, women tend to forget all of the amazing accomplishments that they have had in their life because, you know, today it's, what is today? Today's Thursday. See, I can't even remember the day. So today's Thursday. If I asked, you know, a woman what she did Monday morning that she was really proud of, she probably couldn't remember what that was, much less last month, last quarter, last year, because we go through life and work at such warp speed that we don't slow down enough to capture those micro wins, those sense of accomplishment things, to be able to go back and say, oh, wow, I did that. Yeah, I did that too. So there's a sense of imposter syndrome where when you're tackling something that is so much larger than you, you forget all of the innate skills and talents that you have in order to accomplish that and to move toward it. So that's one. But having that community, again, everyone else can see how extraordinary she is. So having other people remind you of the talents and the skills and the passion and the drive that you have, that elevates her back up and pushes the imposter syndrome away a little bit. So that's one. And then the other thing, back to the system, you know, depending on what area that she's going in, whether it's dealing with racial inequality or food insecurity, you're bumping up against systems that have been in existence for a very, very long time, and you're trying to disrupt the status quo of any of those systems and trying to break through those barriers. And when you get, you know, when you hit a wall and you're told no, or that will never work, oh, we tried this already, you know, women especially tend to cave back down a little bit and say, oh, okay. Well, the community pushes her back and says, no, you're doing this for a reason. You know it's not okay. Push through that and don't take no for an answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, something I've noticed in many, many meetings, usually in a business context, is firstly, if they are meetings of senior business leaders and women are underrepresented, where they unfortunately often are, that often makes it easier to drown out their voice, you know, because it's always seems to be the men who are, you know, louder, more quick to just say their opinion. And I, of course, I'm generalizing a lot here, but it does seem to me that one of the things we need to do as men, especially maybe as men who've grown used to speaking our minds, is just to shut up sometimes, especially when there are women in the room, and listen and invite women's voices into the conversation when they're not doing that themselves. I don't know if that's a common experience, but that's been some of my experience.
Absolutely. And it also takes, you know, if you have a leadership team of 10 individuals and you have 8 men and 2 women in the room, and Sarah comes up with an idea and she actually voices it into the space, and it just drops. Nothing is said. 5 minutes later, Steve says the same thing, and everyone around the table says, oh yeah, that's a great idea. Someone else at that table needs to respectfully say, Steve, you know, Sarah just mentioned that a couple of minutes ago. Let's let her expand on that idea a little bit further. So it's the conscious awareness of who is saying what in that room, and having the courage to speak up and be an ally for the women in that room if something like that happens. And if you happen to have a table where not only is there no women, but there's also no diversity at the table, having the courage to say, before we dive into this discussion, what voices are missing in this dialogue that we need to have represented before we even dive into this conversation? Those kinds of conversations need to be had immediately.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, we're coming near to the end. And so on the question of voices, I'm going to ask you, whose voices are you listening to? Are you inspired by perhaps a book or two that you have read recently or are reading? I know that I recently have been inspired by so many women's voices in books, books like The Mother Tree, I've just finished one on the sort of revolution happening in farming by Sarah Langford. I mean, there really is some remarkable storytelling that's going on. And that's one way we can listen. So is there anything that's really inspiring or occupying you right now in terms of that?
Yeah, so there's a couple. As I mentioned, I'm heading back to Rwanda in July. So one of the books that I'm rereading is called Left to Tell by Immaculée Ilibagiza. And she's a genocide survivor of 1994. And it's her journey to survival. And it's also her journey to healing. So I'm reading that book. And I'm also revisiting Rwanda Women Rising by Ambassador Swanee Hunt, which is another extraordinary book. So those are two books that I'm reading in the moment. And, you know, a name that everyone would know, you know, one of the women that I look up to in this space is Melinda Gates. And she has a quote that I close every speech that I'm giving around the world, every workshop that I deliver. This is the quote that embodies a lot of the work that we do. And the quote is, trust yourself and trust your own voice. Women speaking up for themselves and for those around us is the strongest force we have to change the world.
Wonderful. Really wonderful. And so thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us. And
my absolute pleasure.
We will share those book suggestions also in the notes, together with the good work that you're doing through your organization. Thanks for sharing the inspiration. One of the things I'm very aware of is that role models are extremely important in this space. And so that's one of the things that you're really helping to showcase. So thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Wade.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. It was wonderful to hear the stories of how Rwandan women have been so inspiring and instrumental in the work of Women Igniting Change. And so I'd like to end with a poem of mine, a tribute really, which is called Women of Africa. Women of Africa, in the land of bow and spear, of chieftain and warrior, of hunter and hunted, you are the silent gatherer, the unsung provider, the hidden basket. We raise you up and speak your praise. In the shifting sands of power, you are the pyramid of constancy, standing firm against the fierce winds of time. On the endless plains of possibility, you are the gentle matriarch, leading the way through the fickle seasons of life. In the thirsty dust of desperation, you are the baobab of sustenance, rooted deep in the quenching earth of faith. You gather the tears of the world, and in the midst of mourning, you find reason to smile. You gather the tribes of the world, and in the chaos of squabbling, you sow seeds of community. You gather the stories of the world, and in the firelight of remembrance, you keep the spirit burning. Women of Africa, the music of every place moves to your swaying hips and shakes to your stamping feet. Women of Africa, the children of every time suckle on your ample bosom and fall asleep to your lullaby. Women of Africa, the victims of every tragedy seek solace in your arms and find comfort in your voice. You gather the light of the world, and in the darkest caves of evil, you spread luminescence. You gather the orphans of the world, and in the villages of your heart, you give them a place to call home. You gather the elders of the world, and in the sacred councils of trust, you show us a better way. When our past dries to a trickle, you are the river delta that reunites our memories with the sea of history. When our days are drought-stricken, you are the tireless pestle that grinds our hardship into the flower of wisdom. When our future lies in shadow, you are the wild prophetess that divines our destiny in the patterns of bones. Women of Africa, in a world of folly and fear, of division and diversion, of begetting and forgetting, you are the mighty gatherer, the harvester of wholeness, the maker of peace. We honor you this day and forevermore. Thank you for joining me. I hope you'll join me again next time when my guest will be Jed Emerson. He's sometimes thought of as the founding father of impact investing, and he brought us the concept of blended value. Today he's Chief Impact Officer at LT Tiedemann Global. I look forward to having you join me then. In the meanwhile, have a thriving week.